Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche. Auch bei den Johnsons. Oder, Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau. Made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Stu does America.
A simple message to our friends out in tents at Columbia University. Learn, then protest. The order is important. You can make sure you get the shirt or the mug or whatever you want at stewdoesmerch.com. Use the code STU10, get 10% off your entire order. Perfect for protest season. Be sure to check out the show on YouTube as well, youtube.com/stewdoesamerica. You can like and comment on the videos. Helps with the stupid algorithms on all these sites. So we appreciate it when you do that. Click the bell for notifications and you'll get all of our surprise broadcasts. Jason Buttrell is going to be here to explain what looks like a color revolution happening in America. We'll get into that. Donald Trump gets held in contempt of court. But we start by doing the Columbia occupation. You know, it's a fascinating thing we're watching go on right now all across the country. Columbia University set down a big red line. They said, don't you dare cross this red line. And the protesters were like, what red line? Man, you don't mean any of this. Columbia University begins suspending students who refuse to leave encampment. In a daily audio briefing on Monday, Ben Chang, Vice President, Office of Public Affairs for Columbia, said the administration has begun suspending students as part of a next phase to ensure safety on campus. He did not say how many students have been suspended so far and said there is a discipline process. He said the university was hopeful during negotiations and were discouraged when students were unable to come to a consensus. The leaflet that was left out for the protest group said Columbia Students for Justice in Palestine said the university distributed leaflets telling the group to leave the encampment by 2 p.m. deadline or risk suspensions and probations until June 2025. They say they are also being threatened with evictions from housing and possible expulsion. It was kind of funny because they were like, oh, hey, you better not be there at 2. So they just added a bunch of people at like noon so they could try to defend the encampments. And then, of course, Columbia let the red line go by and didn't really do much of anything. So what does that lead to? When you make a red line and you let the people who you've given the red line to cross that red line, what happens usually? Usually it escalates. Protesters take over Columbia's university's building in escalation of Israel-Hamas war demonstrations. Again, I'm very uncomfortable calling these war demonstrations. I'm very uncomfortable calling them protests. I mean, at some point, you embrace the language just from the aspect of like trying to communicate easily and quickly. So you know what we're talking about. But like, these are not protesters. OK, a lot of these people support Hamas. I mean, you know, again, you can call that a protest if you want. Maybe there's an academic, opening for someone to support Hamas, I guess. I certainly don't see it, but I guess that does exist all over academia for whatever reason. But when you're damaging property and breaking down all sorts of things inside of a building you shouldn't have access to, that's not what we call a protest. I don't remember the January 6th protesters being mentioned all that much. I remember rioters. I remember insurgents. I remember all that stuff. But I don't really remember protesters being the focus of that. Here is here are the Columbia students now breaking into a building. Look at these quote-unquote protests. Again, a hammer, breaking windows right in front of people. You know, thousands of people there taking the photos of all this going on. They don't care. And they eventually keep pushing on the doors and break through. And run away. Run away! Run away! This is not a quote-unquote protest, okay? That's not what this is. Then, of course, there was a Heinz Hall, which is the place where a lot of this was going on. There was a flag dropped here showing the superiority of... I mean, the inmates are running the asylum, and the inmates have put a flag down to make sure you know they're running it. Now, of course, they're also chanting things, as they usually do. We have the Intifada flag up. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
And the Jews won't be there, so we don't have to worry about that. By the way, am I the only one who, when I hear intifada, I think of frittata and I get hungry? Am I the only person that this happens to? Because it happens to me all the time. Now, there are, of course, more of this going on. The counter-protesters were muscled away from a door. This is, look at this. By the way, these are known people who want Jews dead. The person leading this protest, we'll get into him here in just a minute. They're trying to push away the people who are protecting the university. No help, no security there helping them, nothing like that. No, no. Let them fend for themselves. Now, of course, Texas and Florida are handling things just a little bit differently than New York. When these things are popping up in those states, the protesters are being removed quickly and things are under control quickly. And I have not seen the word insurrection used for these particular protesters taking control of buildings they don't belong in. I've seen it being downplayed. I've seen it being excused as understandable considering the circumstances. It's not understandable. It wasn't understandable on January 6th either. Sorry, it just wasn't. And it never will be. You shouldn't be doing these things. This is not acceptable behavior, whether you like the policies of the United States or you don't. This is not what you do in a civilized society. And, you know, you might say, well, we're not civilized anymore. Well, I mean, if that's the world you want, I mean, you can have it. It's available to you. Usually it's available in the Middle East, though. Usually it's available in third world countries. I don't want it to be available to you here. I mean, the people who were protesting George Floyd's death, those people thought, hey, maybe we should maybe we should bring a little of the third world right on home. I don't want that world for America. I've got kids who live here. I want them to live in a world like I lived in. You know, that was at least mildly sane at times. That's really the only standard we're looking for at this point. Now, Elise Stefanik is up there. You know, she's in the upper echelon, I would say, of potential Trump VP choices, though. I don't know. It's possible. I'm a little skeptical that she'll actually get it, but she is definitely going for it. Here she is responding to the college protests.
The world is watching as the leadership of our so-called elite colleges and universities continue to fail to condemn anti-Semitism and protect Jewish students on campus. Just look at the abject failure of Columbia's president to enforce their own code of conduct that they gave lip service to during the recent education and workforce hearing. Last night, the pro-Hamas anti-Semitic mob took over an academic building. The university leadership has lost complete control. It is a disgrace, and it is untenable, and we as House Republicans will hold them to account. I will continue to lead on this issue, and House Republicans will expand our efforts on oversight with additional committee chairs with an announcement later today.
That's the big threat of committee chairs. Committee chairs coming your way. Stefanik's been actually really great on this. She's been, and now she's kind of been a one-note candidate for the VP job, and she's been very good on this particular issue when it comes to elite universities. I don't know if that's enough to get her, the number two person on the ticket. We should do maybe this week or next week a Veep stakes type of thing. We'll give you like a running countdown of who's in fifth place, who's in fourth place. It'll be completely made up by my perceptions, but that's the important thing, right? I'll give you my power rankings. VP power rankings coming soon to Studios America. I wonder at this point. I mean, are these all students doing this? We know that, I mean, the estimates from the mainstream media are about 50% of these people are not even students. They're outside agitators, protesters, paid people who are coming in and doing a lot of these things. And, the stupid students are going along with it. Some of them are just really dumb and they don't know what's going on. They're trying to fit in. Some of them are just as radical as the activists themselves. You wonder what the percentages are between those two groups. Be terrifying to know the truth on that one. Now, when you step back and you look at all these protests, you think to yourself, our country's lost. Like, we're screwed. What is going on here? Well, then you step back and you think, well, let's look at the entire country as a whole. And the news is a little bit better there. A vast majority of Americans are backing Israel over Hamas, says a poll. Harvard Caps Harris survey shared with The Hill showed that 80% of registered voters said they support Israel more in the war, while 20% said they support Hamas more. This is about in line with the poll's finding last month when 79% indicated they support Israel more. In the poll, older age groups were much more likely to be supportive of Israel than younger respondents, though a clear majority of each age group supported Israel more than Hamas. More than 90% of those is over 65 years old. Of those 55 to 64, also over 90% said they support Israel more, while 85% of those 45 to 54 and 3/4 of those 35 to 44. You do see those numbers dropping as we get to younger groups, and that winds up playing out all the way to the bottom. Support for Israel was the lowest among the youngest age groups. Pollsters found 64% of those 25 to 34 and only 57% of those 18 to 24 said they support Israel more, while the rest of those age groups said they support Hamas more. Now, a lot of people said, well, this is, you know, encouraging, right? Like, we hear all the crap going on in the news, and you look at these university protests, you're like, gosh, have we all gone insane? Then you look at that poll, and it's like 80-20 support of Israel over Hamas, and you're like, okay, maybe that's good news. But I challenge you to think about it for a second. This is not Israel versus the Palestinian people. This is not Israel versus innocent, homeless people on the streets. The question is specifically Israel versus Hamas, like the country of Israel, our ally, versus a known terrorist group that just wound up murdering 1,200 people a few weeks ago. Well, months ago now. I guess it's been a little bit longer than that. But I mean, this should not be 80-20. We should not be happy with 80-20. 80-20 means 20% of our country supports terrorism. And we're like, oh, what? That's wonderful news. It's not good news. This should be 99 to 1 or 100 to 0. Let me give you a couple of other polls. If you say, who's better, Chris Pratt or Jeffrey Epstein? If that one came out 80-20 Pratt, would Pratt be happy about that? Would anyone be happy about that? How about, I don't know, who's better, Sidney Sweeney or Harvey Weinstein? Hey, oh, 80% favor Sidney. Well, that's good news. At least our country's kind of saying no. The fact that 20% support the guy who was having sex with everybody, including plants, is not a good thing. Now, we are doing what we can to help the people in Gaza. And it's odd that we're doing it, isn't it? Why are we doing it? Why is the United States responsible for this particular problem, considering 150 nations came together to say how bad Israel was, and they couldn't even say how bad Hamas was? So those 150 countries seem like they could come together, and maybe they can bring all the wonderful food supplies to the Gazans who need it. But now, of course, we're doing it. Images show U.S. military building a floating pier off of Gaza. Pentagon says it will cost $320 million. So now we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars to give food aid to a few people who don't quite entirely mind us all that much, and the vast majority of people who want us all dead. That's wonderful. What a great plan that is. By the way, you'll be surprised to hear it's like 100% over budget already. Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh said on Monday the pier will cost $320 million. That estimate includes all costs associated with the initial construction of the system known as the Joint Logistics Over the Shore, or JLOTS. The cost of operating the pier will likely grow over the next several months. So it's not just $320 million. It's going to grow over the next whole month. But look what you're getting for your money here. Look at these pictures. This looks awesome. I mean, a floating pier of scrap metal looking stuff. And wow, what an incredible achievement this is. A big floating deck in the middle of the water. By the way, Dad, I mentioned we just had tax day the other day. All the money you'll ever make in your entire life, you'll pay taxes on. And all that money combined won't even pay for one of the little rectangles that make up that pier. Not even one. All your life's work, all the taxes you'll pay in your entire life won't even make up for one of the rectangles that makes up the floaty thing that we're doing to make sure terrorists can eat. Just wanted to paint that little picture here, because we're now like 350 days away from the next tax day. I don't want you to really forget it. By the way, here's the overhead. This is the giant thing you're building. So congratulations. See that little tiny square in the little corner there? That's you. You made that one. Good job, boys and girls. By the way, I think, can't we do this cheaper than $320 million? Every summer, and my kids have gone to this a couple times here in Texas, and I think it goes all over the country, the world's largest floating obstacle course comes to town. Look at this thing. It's awesome. It's like a bunch of bouncy houses on the water, and you jump off, and you jump in the lake, and you get back on, and you try to stay afloat, and you slip off, and it's a great time. And why don't we just have these people build the pier? I mean, do we really look how much more fun that would look than our stupid scrap metal heap that we have out there now? I'm just saying. And I bet they could do it for $2 million, not $320. That's just a prediction. By the way, what do you know about this floating pier? It's going to bring food somehow to the middle, to the people in Gaza. I mean, everyone knows this is just a ploy, right? Joe Biden is losing voters, younger voters in particular, who are upset about the whole Israel thing. They're calling him Genocide Joe. So he's trying to make sure he gets out there and puts on a happy face. And if it costs $320 million of your money, fine, whatever, even though this is not really going to do anything to solve the problem in the Middle East. Even if your entire focus is helping the citizens of Gaza, regardless, this is not going to be the answer to all of that. But I'm kind of surprised that that's all you know about this, because I was kind of interested about this story that happened a few days ago. A mortar attack on the Gaza coast spotlights risk to U.S. pier mission. Militants launch mortars at Israeli forces in Gaza as they prepare for the arrival of a floating U.S. Army pier dispatched to facilitate delivery of humanitarian aid, U.S. officials said on this past Thursday, an incident that underscores the mission's vulnerabilities. The attack on a marshalling area for the pier caused minimal damage and occurred while U.S. ships involved in the operation remain a ways offshore. The pier is under construction by U.S. troops, though nowhere near mortar range, and expected to be put into service by early May. Now, by the way, this is just one of several attacks that has happened. People from, we don't know if it's Hamas, if it's Islamic Jihad, we don't know who it is, but somebody's firing at this pier. And it's not Israel, it's not us. Who is it? I wonder who it could be. You know, it's interesting because you would think they would want, if they wanted food, if this was really about aid to Gaza, they'd be excited about this $300 million pier we're popping up there to bring some rice into town. But no, instead, they're firing at it. Makes you think maybe this isn't about aid at all. That's just a question. And by the way, why wasn't that a massive story? I mean, it was a massive story when the World Central Kitchen employees were killed. Rightfully so. Like, that was a terrible tragedy. I mean, that's a good organization, even though I don't agree with the leader's politics. But it's a good organization helping people around the world in these types of areas. And the fact that some of them died in the line of that duty is terrible. Israel even said so themselves. But it's fascinating to look at this and say, yeah, does anyone care? Does anyone question the moral authority of Hamas these days? Does anyone even bother doing that anymore? And I want to leave you with this, because this is, of course, typical Republicans pounce verbiage, but it gets to something interesting here. Why the right loves the anti-Israel encampments. Three reasons Trump and Bibi want the protest to continue. And of course, you know, it makes the typical arguments. Republicans are pouncing on this for their advantage, blah, 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 blah. But I want to draw your attention to one of the guys we saw in one of those early videos, the one where they were barricading the door. One of these guys is someone who's known. He was supposed to be kicked off of campus already. University of Michigan, leader of the main student anti-Israel group. This one is the other protest, who had been sympathetically profiled in the New York Times and given the university's prestigious award for students who best exemplify the leadership and extraordinary vision of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., wrote on social media, "Until my last breath, I will utter death to every single individual who supports the Zionist state. Death and more. Death and worse. These are the people that are surrounding your kids at college. These are the people in that little college town that's having that little encampment that's being treated so nicely by the media. These are the people we're talking about, who are wishing anyone who even supports Israel, let alone just Jews, but anyone who supports Israel, death, and not just death, death and worse. This is what we're dealing with right now. And unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better."
America.
Our wonderful friends over at Jace Medical want you to look back a little bit. Think back to the times. Remember 2020, 2021, where you couldn't get anything? You remember when you would order like stuff and it wouldn't show up for 8 weeks? There was a lot of problems with our supply chains. And of course, there's now still some problems with the supply chain. I told a story the other day of a friend of mine who had to drive 45 minutes to get the medication he needed. When did that start? Aren't we supposed to just go to like the CVS or Walgreens down the street? They're supposed to have everything. Well, they don't have everything every time anymore. And honestly, some of these major medications that can be the difference between life and death, a lot of times they're running out right now. We don't need that to happen, and you don't need that to happen in your household. So get a Jace case. This is a simple way to prepare yourself for what might be coming around the corner. And you're also just prepared. Like, I mean, whether you're traveling or whatever, this provides a 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. So all you have to do is fill out a simple form online. You'll have it there ready for you in case you need it. They have a bunch of add-ons. You can get an EpiPen if you need it as well. Jace Medical is empowering people just like you to be able to take your family's health into your own hands. So check them out today, jacemedical.com. Enter the code STU at checkout. You'll get a discount on your order right now. The promo code is STU at jacemedical.com. jacemedical.com, J-A-S-E medical.com. The code is STU.
Hey Leute, hier ist Max Giesinger und ich habe mir gerade Harry Potter und das verwunschene Kind angeguckt. Was eine geile Show, könnte ich mir direkt nochmal reinziehen. Sichert euch jetzt Tickets unter harrypottertheater.de.
Bis Sommer 2026. Ein letztes Mal Magie.
Nur noch für kurze Zeit, also husch husch in den Warenkorb mit den Tickets.
I want to bring in Jason Buttrell. He's the head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. And by the way, Jason, Glenn Beck is the person who's had the most appearances on Studios America from the beginning. Second place, Jason Buttrell.
I mean, you're a smart man for many reasons. Yeah. Bringing me on the show is another one of those.
Yeah, well, you've got a two appearance lead over Dan Andrews right now.
Screw that guy.
Yeah, I know.
I'm coming on tomorrow. He'll be calling you, I bet, after he watches tonight.
He will. Well, welcome to the program. Let's go a little history lesson here. You were on the radio today talking about color revolutions and how that ties into today. And a lot of people would be like, what are you talking about? Where does this play in? So let's take this back to the beginning, back to the Arab Spring. Barack Obama, president, doing all sorts of things behind the scenes. Take us there.
So before the Arab Spring, even, we can go back even further, okay, like around 2009-ish or something like that, the State Department under Obama decided to do this program called Civil Society 2.0. So Civil Society 2.0 was basically this U.S. State Department training NGOs, training activists from other countries. Sometimes they brought them over here and did it. And sometimes they went over to the other countries and said, hey, you know, all you people, you know, of military age that can, you know, rise up and hit the streets. This is what you do, you know, as far as, you know, reaching the maximum amount of people. So they taught them, you know, social media, how to basically do like, it was basically global community organizing. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. But how do you manipulate the media? How do you manipulate people through social media? How do you gather people in large things like that? That's mm-hmm. what they started doing. Well, 2010 rolls around, and this is when it was December 2010 was when the Arab Spring first launched. But before that, maybe 3 or 4 months before that, President Obama did a really weird thing. He did a presidential study order, something like that. And there's presidents do that all the time. Most of them eventually get declassified. This one never did. To this day, if you go to the website, you'll see all the presidential study directives. And that's what it is. It's directive. You go through the presidential study directives. Presidential study directive 11 is still classified.
All the other ones from his era?
Not all of them.
Most of them.
But yeah, most of them. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why it's considered so classified. The only brief description is like 4 or 5 words that says like political reform in the Middle East and Northern Africa. That's all it is.
Okay.
But interesting locations because mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months later, boom, the Arab Spring exploded. Mm-hmm. Instantly, all these NGOs are going into action. You know, they're community organizing. They're using slick ways of using Facebook and all these other ways to reach out to people on a mass level.
An NGO is a non-governmental organization.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which they call civil society mm-hmm. in those circles. But it's just very interesting because this led to tons of regime change. Egypt, you know, Tunisia, all these places, you know, they tried in Syria, you know, all over the place mm-hmm. in the Middle East. And then later it would basically be copied around 2013, 2014 with the State Department now calling these Civil Society 2.0 things little tech, they called them tech camps, where they were, again, training organizers, helping them to, you know, get out in the streets. The Maidan protests in Ukraine happened. Mm-hmm. We know the United States, led a lot by Victoria Nuland, was heavily involved. Mm-hmm. Regime change seemed to be Civil Society 2.0. It seemed like that was Obama's kind of secret foreign policy that they were using as ordered through a directive that they never declassified.
It's just essentially a replacement for war as a way to get what you want around the world. This right. sort of underhanded, weaken the interior structure of the country, start a bottom-up type revolution, and then pray for the best.
Yeah, there was a Russian general called Gerasimov, and the Gerasimov Doctrine kind of copied what he saw that NATO was doing. NATO kind of changed their first strike ability, or not first strike, but a lot of their strategies once the internet came to prominence, once mm-hmm. social media came out. But they said, why use soldiers to fight these battles? Why not have the people do it themselves through information? And Russia ended up copying a lot of that as well. But it's a well-known tactic, and it seems like it really came, you know, into power during the Obama administration.
Are we seeing that now when it comes to what's going on with Gaza and the universities? And I mean, it does seem like there's a tie in there.
You get these NGOs, you know, that are very similar. They have dark money funding through, you know, a lot of these dark money, you know, organizations. Spring into action, you get the signs, you know, you get the same color tents thrown out there immediately. I think Fox News just did a story, I think it was yesterday, talking about a lot of these NGOs and some of these dark money groups that are going directly to some of these groups, kind of like that. What's that Palestinian for students for Palestine or whatever that always, I think they're the first ones at Columbia that started that up. Mm-hmm. But then what do you see from the media, which is interesting? You always see, usually, the media either turning a blind eye when things, you know, start getting violent, kind of like at Columbia, or you'll see them in other ways pretty much agging them on, all but agging them on. Social media all over the place, you know, will be pushing some of these actions, some of these issues.
Yeah.
You'll see, like, the Obama administration, you know, he was just, we're finding out more and more every day how the Biden administration is funding a lot of these influencers on places like TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought there was an interesting story that came out. I talked about it briefly, but it was a TikTok influencer, also an OnlyFans influencer, who talked about this openly on a podcast saying, yeah, they came to me, Biden came to me. And I thought this was an interesting part of it. She didn't say Biden came to me. She said just some third party. There's just some third party that came to me and said, hey, will you talk positively about Biden? Will you say, as a person of color, that Ketanji Brown Jackson inspired you or something? And she's like, yeah, I'm just basically just doing political propaganda. Everyone's talking about the idea that Biden, you know, is trying to get this done through some OnlyFans influencer, which is just comical. I can't even, this 80-year-old guy right. trying to get OnlyFans girls to talk about his dumb policies. But I thought that side aspect of it being a third party that didn't have their fingers on it and that told this influencer, apparently, according to her, that she didn't have to disclose it was an ad because it wasn't a product, which is, I don't think, the rule at all. I think it's the opposite of that. Usually these social media companies want you to disclose it more if it's political speech. So all this comes together, like there are these efforts going on behind the scenes that we don't know about that are influencing the way we talk about politics and the way our country deals with it. Not in the least the fact that a lot of this is happening on a Chinese Communist Party-owned platform.
Yeah. And when everything you just described, what does that sound like to you? It sounds like Civil Society 3.0.
Yeah.
3.0 being taking what we've learned and perfected overseas during the Arab Spring, during Ukraine, during the other color revolutions that popped up. There was even one in Russia right after Putin was elected for the gazillionth time. But it sounds exactly like what they did was they took their skills from there, and now you have people over here, once they came back home, doing the exact same thing. The story of the NPR CEO. That she had ties to the Arab Spring and some of these like shady NGOs and I don't know, they always have some kind of alphabet, you know, abbreviation to them. National Democracy, blah, 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 whatever. But a lot of times they're used as CIA cutouts, intelligence community cutouts. She comes back after the Arab Spring and specifically engaging with the people that were hitting the streets. Comes back here. She goes to work for, what is it, Wikimedia?
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, CEO of NPR, National Public Radio. What the hell is she doing from there? And then, you know, the whistleblower, this guy that came out and said, hey, this went wildly, you know, to the left. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it. We were never like this. Why is it like that now? Civil society 3.0, maybe? I don't know. I would love to. Once that came out, once these connections are all just kind of like, we were doing stories about this, like, I think back in 2020 or something like this, 4 years ago. And now we're hearing more personalities popping up that directly go into that theory that, you know, our State Department was very much involved in color revolutions. A lot of those people are back here. Now they're the CEOs of major companies and media organizations. Seems odd, doesn't it?
Sure does. Let me talk about Colombia a little bit here and the protests going on there. You know, I feel like there's like, in a time of, when you're challenged, when you're at a time of stress, when something difficult is going on, there's a few different types of leaders. You have, like, if you go back to COVID, for example, you have Ron DeSantis, right, who was pretty decisive, I think handled it pretty well, and was able to kind of like give his state a heads up or a head start against other states when it came to recovery from COVID because of the way he handled it. He handled it decisively, had an instinct for doing the right thing generally through that period. On the other side of that is someone who has strong instincts, but it's totally wrong, like an Andrew Cuomo, who, you know, immediately was like, oh, yeah, sure, take the people who are already COVID positive and put them right back in with all the old people at the nursing homes. Like, so inexplicably incompetent that it's just like almost like inside of him to make the wrong decision each time. I feel like the Colombia president is in a third category, which is just like terrified, like, to do anything. She seems to be there just like every day, releases another statement that goes kind of down the other road until she gets pushed back and then goes the other way. Mm. They keep making these bright red lines about the, about the encampments. Sorry. About the encampments. And then the red line comes, the deadline passes, nothing happens. And then they just go on the next day and make another threatening thing. They have no idea. She seems to have absolutely no idea how to handle this stuff.
I mean, that university is so radical. I can only imagine, because she's absolutely seems scared. She's the deer in the headlights at this point, mm-hmm. completely frozen, unable to act. I mean, at Columbia, you have professors that engage in it. They will stand up with megaphones and talk about Marxism. I don't know what you can do when you're looking at a bunch of protesters over here, some of them true believers, the rest just falling in line because they think it's cool. And on the other side, you've got a bunch of professors pushing from the other direction. I don't know how the heck you even combat that, but it's an interesting dynamic looking at college universities now and in the future. I feel like it's been several generations that have been so brainwashed at these universities. They're radicals, and they're building more radicals daily. How do you de-radicalize? I mean, there's got to be a point where they're like, whoa, this went way too far. But how do we stop it? You know, it's like people in Gaza. There's been generation after generation of people that have been trained to hate Jews. I mean, how does Israel even deal with that situation? You have kids that are running around, little kids, and there's videos of them all over the place saying, when I grow up, I'm going to go kill some Jews. How do you handle that?
How do you reverse it?
I don't know. I mean, but our college campuses are very similar.
Yeah.
It's been generation upon generation upon generation of these students. They go on to be professors at these universities. It's just it's a never-ending cycle now of this radical left-wing ideology. I mean, if you're a president at one of these universities, how do you even make an attempt to bring sanity? I don't know how you can. Unless you just let all the professors go, say, fine, you know, if you want to protest in these ways, support the, you know, the takeover of our buildings over this cause, fine, you can go. We will rebuild and start over again.
It's an intractable problem, I think, at some level. Let me take you to one other one before we go. We've got about a minute here, so let's just solve this problem. It's easy to do in a minute. Gaza versus Israel. You've got the situation going on there, and like what you describe with the professors is a minor league example of what you describe in the Palestinian territories, where we see these polls of 90% of people saying they would kill Jews if they could, or they support the killing of Jews. They support October 7th. That's in 70 and 80% approval. in the Palestinian territories. What, where is an answer to this? Like, I keep coming back to this. If you've got 90% of the people who are approving of this, that doesn't mean there aren't good people or people that could be well-meaning members of society in the country. There are. I mean, maybe it's 10%. But like, when you're at 90 to 10, it just feels like there's no answer to this. There's no happiness over the rainbow outside of God intervening and changing hearts. That's the only thing.
Yeah. I don't want to say nuclear weapon, so don't take that from this.
Okay. But yeah, that's a good, interesting story. Yeah.
But I am going to compare it to Imperial Japan.
Okay.
The ideology was very, very similar. You know, to death cult level status. They got beat so brutally and assuredly that they had no choice but to capitulate. I don't want to see that obviously happen in Gaza, but what that, the way that translates to this is they have to be completely beaten, Hamas dismantled, and the Gaza Strip occupied. And that has to happen for a very long time. How long? I don't know. At some point, you hand it over to a governor or something like that, you know, that's from that area or something.
Yeah, find one of the good 10% and have them lead the territory and
yes.
Hope for the best.
Yep. I have watched the video footage of, you know, that the Israeli government shows. After you see that, you will have the exact same opinion. This cannot stop. It absolutely cannot stop. They have to be beaten utterly, decisively, and occupied. That's the only question. That's the only answer.
And as you started this with, I'm not advocating for a nuclear bomb. I appreciate that.
I am not.
But it should remember that Imperial Japan didn't surrender after the nuclear bomb. They surrendered after the second one, mm-hmm. right? Like, that is how hardcore they are. And I don't know that there's a massive difference. It is, you know, and there's some differences, obviously, that you know, you could point out. But when it comes to adherence to a hardcore ideology, you know, that is unrelenting. I mean, I don't know that there is.
It's going to be a wild ride because the International Criminal Court is making moves. It looks like they're going to go after Israeli officials, charge them with war crimes. Is that not insane?
Yes, it's completely
insane. That was established after World War II, after the Holocaust, to make sure the Holocaust didn't happen again. And now they're
like cheering it on.
It's insane.
It's incredible. Jason Buttrell, head writer, researcher for Glenn Beck, number two most appearances here on this particular program. I think the third best person at the Power Hour, as I believe the records show that. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Jason.
Fake news.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Well, we talked about this when it happened, and it seems to be happening, unfortunately. Britney Spears, completely dysfunctional and in danger of going broke. This is from TMZ. You can say, well, maybe that's not true. It's possible it's not true. She supposedly had $60 million and is now close to $0 million, which is not great. She goes every month to Hawaii, takes a private jet, stays in the presidential suite of the Four Seasons, dropping $350,000 a trip. And the money is going away very quickly. She's not exactly bringing it in at this point. She's more on social media, you know, going along with knives and almost killing her puppy as you watch. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because everyone was like, oh, free Britney, free Britney. And like, look, I tend to be an individualist. And if she wants to be out of her conservatorship, I think with a very, very infrequent exception, we should allow people to do that because, look, even if you want to screw your life up, even if you want to spend millions of dollars, even if you want to blow your life up and you know, create a complete catastrophe, that should be your right to do it, unfortunately. Though I will say, everyone who's like, oh, free Britney, this is ridiculous. You don't just get a conservatorship. This is not easy to get. Something happened that made this possible. It is very, very rare and not easy to get one of these things on somebody. And when it happens, there's usually a reason for it. The fact that it went away and now things are potentially in a meltdown situation is not exactly shocking. If you watch the Wendy Williams documentary that was out, I did. I thought it was fascinating. My wife was into it, and then I got into it, I got to admit. But it was crazy. Like, I mean, and this stuff happens with conservatorships. Usually there's some meaning there that actually is legitimate, even if you don't like the outcome. Jerry Seinfeld is in the news. Pre-cancellation alert for Jerry Seinfeld. I don't know. He's 70 years old. Can he be canceled? Is he too big to cancel? I don't know. He's saying he couldn't put certain jokes in Seinfeld today. Mentions the rickshaw episode where Kramer has... homeless people, you know, go with rickshaws, pull the rickshaws because they're outside anyway. Says, I couldn't get that on the air today. Probably true. I mean, you know, if you want to go to FX or, you know, some, you know, HBO, you can probably do that. Like Larry David did some of that stuff on HBO. It was very, very edgy. But like, look, the bottom line is there's no appetite for this on network television anymore. I mean, it's not even possible to do that there. And we cannot leave today without the happiest news of the day for me, LeBron James gone. Bye-bye. Another year, another first-round exit for LeBron. So difficult to hear. Now, I did see the video of him trying to intimidate a woman on the sidelines, acting like he was going to attack her. That was fascinating and a wonderful video that I took in. But I think my favorite moment has to be the Karen Bass tweet. She's the new mayor of Los Angeles, and she wrote, put this up. Tough season, but at least we won the in-season tournament. Proud of our team, Lakers. Yes, you did hoist that banner up to the ceiling. An absolutely meaningless win of the in-season tournament, which is a joke in and of itself. You got that going for you, which is nice. Congratulations, LeBron. Another wonderful $50 million season. What if your food supply lasted for a couple months, or maybe maybe you had a year of storage? What if, though, you could get one that lasted forever? This isn't a pipe dream. An endless food supply does exist. Nature has kind of brought this to us, and when grocery stores, which are not necessarily natural, you know, a lot of people are like, I want to make sure I'm natural. Well, I hope you're not going to a grocery store. Grocery stores not natural, sometimes they go away. Sometimes they're wiped clean after a big national emergency or weather disaster. So wouldn't it be great if you had fail-proof food? You can, with my Patriot Supply. Preparewithstew.com, preparewithstew.com. You can get a continuous food supply packed inside a survival seed vault from my Patriot Supply, helping millions of American families prepare since 2008. My Patriot Supply is equipped to help you reach self-reliance. The survival seed vault from Patriot Seeds is a never-ending source of fresh fruits and vegetables. These are 20 varieties, zone-friendly, 100% heirloom seeds. They are triple-sealed to protect them against the elements. Plant them right away or wait up for up to 5 years or more. Plant them then. Grow, harvest, replant fresh, delicious beans, greens, tomatoes, melons, and more. Go to preparewithstew.com, preparewithstew.com. Your survival seed vault is there for you. Get planning now. Make sure you have a food supply that never stops. Preparewithstew.com for my Patriot Supply. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, Trump, he's just like me. He's not actually like you. He's got a lot more money than you. And he makes a calculation here and there when it comes to his speech, which is, you know, I got to spend a bunch of money to say this, but it's worth it. Okay, we know this happened with E. Jean Carroll. Like, he came out and spent a couple million dollars, knew it was a big deal. Then he came out and just did it again and then got sued for another $80 million. He's just making these decisions like, look, I'm running for president of the United States. I want to say these things. I'm going to say what I want to say. I don't care about your gag orders. Well, he had a gag order in his case as well in New York. And this is the hush money case we've been talking about for a while. And now he has violated the rules there. And he violated the gag order, according to the judge. And they're like, well, we're going to fine you $1,000 per incident. So he's now has to pay $9,000, which is a huge deal to Donald Trump, I'm sure. Going to break the bank at any moment. I will say that this is kind of known by the judge. And they're like, look, Juan Merchan is like, hey, if you don't correct this behavior, we are going, and we know this doesn't bother you, these fines, so we're going to up this to jail time. Can you imagine if they try to put this guy in jail for contempt of court? I mean, I think Donald Trump would love it, honestly, right now. But man, can you imagine? What does that do to our country? I have no freaking idea. We are on the precipice of disaster. And of course, this is all part of the left's lawfare campaign when it comes to destroying people. They used to try to win on ideas and argue things, even though they were lying a lot of times, at least it was something you could manage. Now they're just suing everybody all the time. Fox News is going to get sued now by Hunter Biden. Why? Because they kept putting his nudie pics up from his laptop on the TV. And that's very, very bad. Can't put the nudie pics on the laptop. Of course, the entire time this is going on, it seemed like Hunter Biden did everything he could to make sure he did not confirm they were even his pictures or even from his laptop. But now, apparently, he's saying they're so real and so personal to me, I can't believe they showed them on the TV. Well, I don't know if this is going to work, but the bottom line is to try to drain the finances and make them terrified to say anything about him. It's a long series of events that with the same aim in mind, destroy anyone who disagrees. Don't forget to subscribe to Blaze TV, blazetv.com/stew. Promo code is stew. Lots of great stuff going on. And Glenn's got another big special coming up on, I think it's next Wednesday. There's a lot of stuff going on Blaze TV. Great shows, great content, and great election coverage. blazetv.com/stew. Promo code is stew.
Jetzt wird es ernst. 250 Arbeitsplätze hängen an einem Sanierungsgutachten. Es beginnt ein Wettlauf gegen die Zeit. Lässt sich der Betrieb noch retten oder ist ein Insolvenzantrag schon Pflicht? In Folge 2 unserer Serie Endstation Insolvenz zeigen wir, wie sich Angst und Risiko von Unternehmern in dieser Phase zuspitzen. Doch es gibt Hoffnung. Jetzt reinhören im Podcast-Kanal Gute Geschäfte von Kreditreform. Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.